This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good Saturday morning from the Kia Studios, 9 floors up in Midtown Atlanta, waiting for the sun to come up on a game day Saturday morning. Sam Crenshaw welcoming you into Sports Radio 92.9 The Game at 92.9thegame.com on this Saturday morning, on this Independence Day holiday weekend that I'm sure many of you are continuing to enjoy. Hope it's been a safe and enjoyable one so far. Hope the weather that rumbled through our area didn't disrupt things for you too much. Disrupted our Braves game for a while. They did get to finish it, and we are pleased with the outcome. But there was some problems with that as well. A lengthy rain delay, but the Braves still come through with the win. And even here outside our Kia Studios, here we're located in Midtown, drive in this morning to find a tree down. So check around the areas. I'm sure we're not the only place in the area with a tree that has fallen in the area, especially if you're in an area that has old trees that have been around for a while. And, you know, sometimes that type of thing happens. So hopefully none of that is happening to your property or in the area where you live. Talk about things that go bump in the night while you sleep. While you were sleeping, my goodness, so much happened last night while you were sleeping. And in dreamland, first of all, Kawhi Leonard makes the announcement. I think it happened around 2 a.m. our time, that they at 11 o'clock West Coast time, he will join the L.A. Clippers. And people were wondering who was going to win the Kawhi sweepstakes. Who was going to win the Kawhi sweepstakes? He had made the whirlwind. He had visited with all the teams. Everybody figured the Raptors may have had the inside since he had the nucleus of a championship team already in place. And some people said he would go home. Would he play with LeBron and the Lakers? He will play in the Staples Center, but he'll play for that other team. He'll play for the Clippers. And that's not all. He's bringing Paul George along with him. He's been able to get ask for a trade out of OKC. And that is what helped to make the deal, that George will be able to join Kawhi and they will play for the Los Angeles Clippers. That's what's coming up. Kawhi's deal, 4 years, $142 million. He gets the max deal with the Clippers. He gets to come back to the West Coast, gets to play in the number two market in the nation, play for a team coached by Doc Rivers. And Paul George, who was a finalist for league MVP honors this year, will join him on that team. Talk about a big excitement in the NBA. Of course, we've been waiting for this one. I mean, things started last weekend when free agency officially kicked off last Sunday evening. And yeah, a lot of movement, a lot of signings, a lot of guys moving around. We've been waiting for this one. This was the big one. And it would happen just as Summer League is getting going and people are watching to see what's happening with, you know, Zion Williamson and some of the new faces coming into the league as they made their first NBA efforts. This happens. But before this happened, there was another story that happened out west. The ground shook. Now, some of you may remember on Independence Day, July 4th, on Thursday, there was an earthquake in Southern California. Well, it was kind of between L.A. and Las Vegas. People in both places could feel it. Well, last night it happened while Summer League games were going on. Matter of fact, the Summer League game that Zion Williamson was playing in was going on at the time. And it comes one, I think this was over 7.1, I think it registered. Just one of the aftershocks that they've had for just some time. It's been going on ever since Thursday. Basically, the ground just hadn't stopped moving. And so this particular one caused the scoreboard to move, anything dangling from the ceiling, kind of akin, I won't say just like, but kind of akin to what happened here at Georgia Dome when the tornado hit it. Anybody remember that scene and the things were moving around up top? And when, I mean, you know, I said not exactly like it, but kind of akin to it. Things were swaying back and forth, and people know, hey, that's not safe. Let's get everybody out of the place. That's kind of what happened. I mean, nothing hit the roof, but fixtures, they were saying as long as the speakers were moving back and forth, they wouldn't be able to put the players back on the floor. And they kind of figured out, well, it looks like these speakers aren't going to stop moving. So we're not going to play any more games. Everybody goes home. That disrupted the summer league last night. So that was the other thing that was happening out west last night with the NBA. A lot to digest, a lot going on there. So, I mean, the Clippers make a deal. The Lakers go ahead now that they missed out on the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes. They signed Danny Green to a 2-year deal. He'll come in and join in. They re-signed Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to a 2-year deal at $16 million. Center LaVale McGee to a 2-year $8.2 million dollar deal. These are all according to ESPN.com. So that's what's happening with the teams out on the West Coast in NBA. NBA making big news late last night, probably while most of you were slumbering. That happened. Meanwhile, here closer to home, our Braves were playing. And, you know, of course, 4th of July weekend, always big weekend at the ballpark, come out, the games. After Thursday night's game, of course, the big fireworks celebration. Well, yesterday kicked off with something we've been anticipating all season long, was a salute to Walter Banks. Walter turned 80 years old this week, and he was a guest on a show with Greg and myself on Father's Day. And we just happened to call Walter and wish him a happy Father's Day. He is truly a treasure and someone that we're happy to know and to be a friend of our show and someone that we've enjoyed having a good rapport with and relationship down through the years whenever we go to the ballpark. As I always say and I always tell you, if you're at SunTrust Park for a Braves game and you don't have a smile on your face, find Walter Banks. He'll share his with you. And a little wisdom, too, if you get a chance to talk with him for a while. Great to have the team honored him this week. He got the bobblehead. And no, I did not get a bobblehead. I would love to have one of those. No, I did not get one of the Walter Banks bobbleheads. And truly a great honor for someone who's been a great ambassador for the Braves and just for Atlanta sports, period. But he is truly that at the Braves games. Has been there since the team. Really, he was at the stadium before the team arrived. You know, the Braves arrived in 66. He was at the ballpark in 65. So he's seen everything that's happened with this baseball team down through the years. And so great to see him honored. And so the Braves go out, and the bats that had just been erupting of late were silent. My goodness, pitcher Jordan Yamamoto spun a jewel last night for the Marlins. And the Marlins are, you know where they are. They're down in the cellar, they're cellar dwellers. They got some young pieces that we can see will be great for them going forward in the future, and he is one of them. Turned in a remarkable performance last night and really just had the Braves kind of handcuffed. They have a long, lengthy rain delay, and they come back, they get two men on, and Brian McCann delivers the game-winning single to left field, and they didn't just have a shift on. They had five infielders. They had changed everything around, fielding alignments, and they dared him to hit it to another part of the field, and he hit it to left field, and the Braves win. That's remarkable. 1-0, that's all they needed to get the victory last night. Braves over the Marlins, great news, worth the wait. Rain delay of over 2 hours last night, 2 hours and 28 minutes, but the Braves do get the win. And Julio Teheran, by the way, had a tremendous effort last night. He pitched one of his better performances of the season last night. 6 sharp innings. He went in the baseball game. That's certainly great news for him and for the Braves starting rotation. Next up, today's game, Caleb Smith is going to start for the Marlins. And Max Fried, who is 9-3, will get the start for the Braves as they take on the Marlins today. So that's good news from there, the Braves getting the win over Miami. Other news, we're going to get into this one really. Across the pond at Wimbledon, Atlanta native Corey Coco Gauff continues. My goodness. Which just some people say continues the fairy tale. if you want to call it that, okay, her amazing run just continues to go at Wimbledon. What a place for a 15-year-old to turn in a performance of a lifetime. Not only to win this match, playing on the game's grandest stage, her first time on center court. Get this, folks. Her match was on center court while Novak Djokovic played on court one. She's on the big court. She's become that big of a story at Wimbledon. And she comes through with a gritty three-set victory that looked for a time like it was done, like it was over. I'm sure the writers probably started writing their final story. It's been a nice run. Boy, it's been impressive. Boy, this young girl has really shown some nice things, but now it's come to an end. No, she wouldn't go. Would not finish, just dug down deep and found some things and did some things that are pretty amazing when you think someone at any age to make the adjustments on the fly, to make the changes, to make the adaptations. We think so much sometimes, you can practice and have your coaches tell you things to do. If this happens, well, why don't you change and do this? Or, tell the quarterback, hey, you're going to have to change the play at the line. If they come up and they show you this, you're going to have to call an audible. It'll just remind you of those things before you go back after you call a timeout. That's what a team sport. This is an individual. And in an individual sport that changes as the match goes on, the match had really changed on her, and the momentum, her opponent had really taken hold of the momentum. This 15-year-old girl found a way to adapt her game and change and really put a different type of pressure on her opponent and come out on top, just so determined to win. It's been a remarkable story. It's been great to watch. It's been a remarkable family story. And, I mean, if you could have taken pictures of her parents throughout that match, you probably would run the gamut of every of every facial expression, every physical pose you could think of as they went through with that match with her. It was just a remarkable thing to see. But here she is through the first week of Wimbledon. We're going to get into that later on. Randy Walker is going to join us later on this hour. Tennis historian, former UGA player, author of This Day in Tennis History. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, and maybe a little bit of the historic perspective of what's happening, as well as what's happening at Wimbledon as well. Later on today, Serena Williams will be in action. Sloane Stephens is going to be in action later today. Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer will be in action today. We'll get into that later on, as well as matches that they're taking place at Wimbledon coming up today. It's been an interesting week so far, the first week of the tournament. Some surprises, some disappointments. Some players on the women's side that have gone out early. The men's draw has kind of, stayed kind of true to form. Some surprises. We're going to have Serena play doubles along with Andy Murray. That's something we weren't expecting to see. You see her play mixed doubles with him. That should be interesting when they get a chance to play that match. And so those are some things to look forward to as we head for the second week. They'll play more singles today and play more matches. And since they're on schedule, they haven't had any rain this week at Wimbledon. They will have tomorrow off, the mid-Sunday, as they normally get to have when they play there at the All England Club. But quite a story, and a story from our neck of the woods. Someone who's a native of our area is doing tremendous things and making the headlines. What a day in sports. What a day. I don't know what Saturday's going to bring, but it's going to have to go a ways to top what happened yesterday. When we think about the NBA. Think about Major League Baseball here in our area. We think about Wimbledon. Those are just some of the things that took place around the area and around sports today. We're going to get back to that and get more into the NBA and really dive into what this trade, what this signing means for the rest of the league. And even in the East, what it means, what it opens things up for. We'll talk about that and more as we continue. Just getting started on a game day Saturday morning here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9TheGame.com. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9TheGame.com. Looking out the window, looks like it's going to be a beautiful Saturday morning, probably going to be another hot one. It has been the last few days here in Georgia. Welcome to Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929TheGame.com. Sam Crenshaw with you until 8 a.m. this morning. I'm on this side of the glass, and Greg is on the other side of the glass today. He's not over here with me, but he's over there. He'll be over here tomorrow. So tomorrow we'll get into our usual discussions that get rather spirited at times. But I will say this. I got to give him a shout out here, man, because in case you guys haven't seen, my sidekick, my partner in crime here on Weekend Mornings, is in a commercial spot. And people are saying, people are texting me. People are texting me, man, did I see Greg in that? I said, yeah, the matinee idol is there. Yeah. Billy D is in a national commercial spot for Sprite. And so you may see it. It's showing up a lot of places. It's showing up on television. It's showing up if you're in a before you're seeing, the previews of the movie. You've been to a movie theater, you might see it in there. Yep. So it's in movie theaters. It's on sporting events. It's everywhere. Okay. And if you just want to go look at it, you can YouTube it at Cody Shane Sprite. K-O-D-I-E. Shane. All right. So up and coming artist that is profiled and featured in this, along with Greg. Cody gets a little bit of the spotlight. Greg is the star. So you want to check it out. He shot it locally, and we're quite proud of him. We really are. And if you're watching this, say, is that him? Yep, that's him. That's him. That's him, folks. Is it? Plus, this week he's working with Clint Eastwood again. And Clint Eastwood has no regard for what time of day it is. If he's working, he may work at midnight or 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., whatever. So that's something else that he's working with, we're going to watch for in the future. But for now, you can see Greg in the Sprite commercial, which we're very proud of. Don't forget, Atlanta United is back to work. And, looking to shake off that nasty, nasty defeat up in Chicago. 5-1. What was that? Hopefully they shake that off tomorrow in what should be a fun, full day of activity at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. As the gates will open early for people to come out and watch Women's World Cup Final, USA against Netherlands. We're going to be live. John Fricke, Hugh Douglas, going to be broadcasting live there. You want to go by and say hello to them. And then once the broadcast is over, and you get to cheer for the USA, Atlanta United will look to get back in the win column against the dreaded arch rival New York Red Bulls. This is a crew that's always been a thorn in our side. Always. And that is who they were facing. You want to see this team come in and do better, especially coming off the setback the way it happened in Chicago. It gives you reason for concern. Joseph Martinez is back with the team. That's good news. Not sure how much he'll get to play with the squad tomorrow, but it's just great to have him back in the building. But that's coming up tomorrow. You can hear the game here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Of course, pregame is at 1:30. Kickoff is at 2. Mike Conte, Jason Longshore will have the call for you, and hopefully it will be a victorious call for our Atlanta United tomorrow. Okay, the big story we talked about and said we'll talk more about in this segment is the NBA. And the big trade that happened last night. Well, not the trade, but the big signing. Something that actually the Hawks were standing by for. The Hawks were standing by to possibly play a role in what happened out west. Because if Kawhi hadn't made his decision by today, the Hawks were supposed to maybe delay a part of the trade that brings Anthony Davis to the Clippers. And by the Clippers, to the Lakers. The Lakers had three other teams involved, Pelicans, Wizards, and Hawks. They were all reportedly lined up to cooperate if Kawhi Leonard hadn't made a decision by today. Of course, now you don't have to worry about that. Kawhi has made his decision. He will not play for the Lakers. He will not return to the North. Instead of we the North, it's like we was the North. Not anymore, because he has announced that he will be going to the Clippers. And Paul George will meet him there. He's requested and will receive a trade from OKC. And so the Clippers now rise to the top. I mean, a lot of people were suspecting that the Lakers, some people were penciling the Lakers in as favorites to get to the West and to win a championship. I don't know about all that, folks. But anyway, that's it. So if that's the case, what do you do with the Clippers now? Do the Clippers supplant that? And talk about the action and the energy inside that one building being the Staples Center. Two teams, what a seismic, I want to say seismic after an earthquake last night, but what a shift in the NBA to have this kind of star power in one building every night. What a treat for the fans there, and much to the chagrin of the fans in New York, once again, who got Madison Square Garden. We're the Mecca. Yeah. They're the Mecca. But anyway, this is happening now. But what does it mean now, the picture, for the rest of the NBA now? And it changes things in the East a bit. The Raptors, you look at them and like, okay, if they had to play today, maybe they'll be a four seed. You know, they're definitely not running with Milwaukee right now. They can be good. You know, they still got some pieces there. They're still going to have the great coach and Nick Nurse. What do they do next season? Looks like Milwaukee's right now bumped up above everybody in the East right now. And people talk about the Hawks. And I know my talk has been here. I want to see the ping pong balls one more year. But with this kind of shift happening in the East, do we want to see the Hawks really play for that eighth spot now? Does it become more realistic, more possibility? Maybe. That may be a case. When you think about the shapes of things in the East right now, we obviously know that the Nets have made a deal. But, I mean, Kevin Durant's not going to play next season. They'll be better. You know, they'll have Kyrie Irving. They'll be one of your better teams in the East. They're going to be better than Milwaukee. I don't think they'd be better than Philadelphia. I don't think they'd be better than Boston. So as the Raptors drop down in that category as far as the East goes, Indiana, they factor in there somewhere. Does Miami factor in there someplace? Maybe. Hawks could fall in the eighth spot. It could be a very realistic thing to think about when you think about the East and think about the NBA. We even mention the Wizards. You mention them? They play basketball in Washington, right? We don't even mention those guys. Or Chicago. So here's the thing. You look how things are shaping. Detroit would be a team that you want to watch in the East as well. But could the Hawks now, because of this shift, does that bring the Raptors down from being one of the premier teams in the premier team in the East, the defending champions? And do we think of our team now as being one of the top eight, possibly, in the East? I still don't know if I'm comfortable with that. I still feel like I want to get another round of ping pong balls. But I know a lot of you want to see them go out there and you want to see them play for the championship. I know. You play to win the game. Meanwhile, out West, what happens to Russell Westbrook and the crew at OKC? That's still going to be one of the top eight teams in the West? I don't know, because now the Pelicans are on the rise. Portland's out there. Houston, they all get along in the locker room. You got to wonder what folks are thinking on that team today. Golden State, you know, you still got Steph. And you still got, you know, Draymond. You still got a crew there that they still be a factor. Utah got better in the last few weeks. Denver is strong. You know, Dallas, are they ready to make an impact? Gave the big deal to Porzingis. West is getting real intriguing, very intriguing right now. And with the Clippers not just being a playoff team, but a team that's now geared to be at the very top of the West, oh, it's gotten really exciting. It really is just the possibilities as you watch. But once again, like last year, seems like we're going to be losing a lot of sleep in the NBA season. Because people are going to want to see all these players and all these stars, and that they're out West. Those games don't tip till 10:30 at night. You got to have the coffee in hand when you go to work the next day, because you'll be staying up real late to see these guys play. But that seems like where so much of the talent is, and so many of the superstars are going to congregate on the West Coast for the teams out there. It's going to be exciting stuff to watch. Expect the unexpected. I wasn't expecting this. Of course, Greg on the other side of the glass is gloating because he was saying Clippers all along. Yes. He's been saying, oh, you go to the Clippers. Go to them. I'm like, Greg, they're not going to no Clippers. You know, oh, yeah, they go to the Clippers. Go to the Clippers. And sure enough, they've got the guy. Shout out to our home folks, Lou Williams, who won the six-man award once again, of course, and is with the Clippers. Man, he's got to be pretty delighted to see what's coming his way and what he's going to get to be a part of. That's a pretty remarkable lineup. And Doc Rivers, we know he has coached the team's championship before, that he can get that done. Patrick Beverley's also a part of the team out there. Clippers will be a force to be reckoned with Kawhi Leonard. Also, Paul George coming on. It is going to be interesting to watch. But it does make a little shift in the landscape for the NBA. And we figured this free agency period would, had the potential to. The farther it went along, the more I thought that Kawhi would stay. I thought he would just stay in Toronto, do a two-year deal or something there, and then eventually go out to the West. Yeah, the West is going to be there. It's not going anywhere. But the deal he got, he was able to get the player that he wanted to come along with him to make the deal sweet enough to happen, and that's what's happening. To the Clippers. So mixed news out on the West Coast, including the ground is shaking. Maybe it's part of this deal that made the ground shake a little bit. How about that? The things that are happening out in the West Coast. But that is big news. It happened late last night. And we'll be talking about that for a while today. We'll be talking about it all weekend, as a matter of fact, as we get set to really just comprehend the far-reaching ramifications of this deal. Now, Summer League continues. And our own DeShaun Tate is in Las Vegas. We maybe catch up with him. I know the hours are different. Maybe at some point this weekend we get a chance to track him down and get his thoughts on what has happened and also what happens with Summer League. The Hawks Summer League starts today, 5 o'clock Eastern time. Hawks Summer League team will take on the Milwaukee Bucks team in Las Vegas, provided the ground stops moving. They're going to play in the other pavilion, though. They're not playing in Thomas and Mack Center. The games in the secondary arena continue to be played. It's just the ones in the big building, the Thomas and Mack Center. Play was suspended last night, and they sent everybody home. So they're going to try to resume Summer League basketball today out in Las Vegas. And the Hawks Summer League team will be in action against Milwaukee, 5 o'clock Eastern time, if you're keeping up with how the young players are doing out there, some of them getting their first taste of NBA action in the Summer League. Some guys looking for a spot in camp to try to come in and be a part of what's happening, part of what's growing and building this Atlanta Hawks basketball team. Be interesting to see how hard these guys fight to get a chance to come back and go to camp and earn a spot here in Atlanta. Okay, while this is happening here, we talk about the West Coast, talk about the Braves playing here. Across the pond, they're having Coco Mania. We're going to talk about that coming up next. Randy Walker joins us to talk about Wimbledon on this Saturday morning here on Sports Radio 99 The Game and 99thegame.com. Sports Radio 99 The Game and 99thegame.com. Sam Crenshaw with you. On this Saturday morning, hope your Independence Day weekend has gone well thus far. It's been a safe one. Hope you've had enjoyed yourself some time off, maybe a little time at the beach, maybe time at the lake, maybe some time with the family, maybe just somewhere with your feet inclined in an easy chair watching some great tennis. And what a spectacular story we've witnessed in Wimbledon through this first weekend. Joining us now on the WaitForIt.com outline, talk about it, tennis historian, tennis author, and former UGA star, Randy Walk. How do you like that introduction?
Hey, well, the UGA star was a little bit exaggerated, okay, considering my career record at UGA was 0-7. So.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But I appreciate the exaggeration.
Always great to catch up with you, especially this time of year. Thoughts about the story? I mean, and right now, she may not win this tournament, but clearly, Corey Golf is the story of Wimbledon 2019.
Well, don't be so fast to counter out, Sam. Brad Gilbert said on ESPN that Coco is the number 4 betting favorite to win the women's singles title at Wimbledon, which is outrageous because she's 15 years old. She's never played Wimbledon. She's only played three matches in her life at Wimbledon, but she's created such a sensation and playing amazing tennis. I just saw that her match yesterday against Polona Hercog of Slovenia was the top-rated television match on the BBC so far at Wimbledon, and actually all three of her matches are in the top 10 rated matches on the BBC at Wimbledon. That's including, you know, the Federer matches, the Djokovic matches, the Nadal matches, etc. So she is really causing a big stir, not only on the other side of the pond, but here too. Everybody is cuckoo for Coco.
You might say that. You might easily say that. But thoughts about that, because we don't see this very often these days. There was a time in tennis when it seemed like there was a 14, 15, 16-year-old phenom that would show up. We don't see that as often anymore because the game has changed. It's a different athlete today than it was.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. You're absolutely right, Sam. I mean, I remember, you know, in the good old days where you had all these young, you know, 14 and 15-year-olds, you know, Jennifer Capriati, Mary Jo Fernandez, Andrea Jaeger, Tracy Austin, you know, even way back with Chrissy Everett at age 14, 15, 16. And you just don't see that anymore. Also on the men's side, you know, you had Boris Becker and Mats Wilander and Michael Chang winning majors at 17, and now you're seeing guys, you know, Roger Federer winning, you know, majors in his late 30s. So you really don't see that. I think the game's become a lot more physical. Also with the women, you've had, you know, the age eligibility rule, which has been good, that has been, preventing players from having burnout and so forth. So that just really adds to, you know, the mystery and, you know, just the sensation that, Coco Gauff is.
Spending some time on the Wade Cup, Wade4.com hotline with Randy Walker. You can follow him on Twitter. He is social at Tennis Publisher, because he is the author of On This Day in Tennis History. Thought I would throw the plug your book while we're on today.
Yeah, thank you.
but back to, how does a 15-year-old, and you know, we're in Atlanta, and this is a hotbed for recruiting. So many parents give their kids so much money for training, for travel teams, for, you know, high-level training, seeking Division I scholarships, or to get to play professionally. Here's a 15-year-old facing a veteran yesterday. On the fly, she adapts. Changes her game, goes to a different type of game than she had to play early in the week against Venus, and she comes out on top. Talk about that, for a 15-year-old to be able to process that and be able to change it. There's no timeout. They're going to talk to your offensive coordinator. There's no timeout. You know what I mean? She's got to make these decisions on the fly at 15 years old against a veteran opponent on the biggest stage of the game.
Yeah, it really is remarkable. I mean, playing on center court at Wimbledon is not an easy task, and is very intimidating. And, you know, she's getting flooded with media interviews and, you know, all the hype, and Roger Federer is gushing about her and so forth. I mean, she's, you know, handled that situation so well. I mean, she's so mature and so poised and so talented. And I think also the fact that she's 15, you know, she's fearless. You know, she doesn't really, she doesn't think as much because she's 15 and she's new to the situation and so forth. And then you have Polona Hercog, who's older and more experienced. And, you know, it's also a huge match for her, too, playing on center court. But she could perhaps was thinking a little bit too much about the occasion and so forth, where Coco wasn't. And Coco just had more belief. You know, she really believed that she could come back and win, even though she was down two match points and she was down a set in 5-2. She never stopped believing that she could win. And I think on the opposite side of the court, you could really see the nerves with Hercog. And I think that she actually didn't believe that she could win and didn't feel like she deserved to win that match on center court and so forth. And there was a real psychological battle there, and they say that, you know, the difference between, you know, great players and good players is the psyche and the psychological aspect of the game. And I think Coco passed that with flying colors yesterday, and that was just remarkable, riveting tennis yesterday. And I can't wait to see her play on Monday against Simona Halep, who's former number one player in the world, a lot more experienced than Polona Hercog. and in fine form, and that's going to be a fascinating match. And Chris Everett said something very interesting on ESPN. She says, I know from experience it's not easy playing a 15-year-old. That she said that when she was in her heyday and she had to play against 14-year-old Andrea Yeager and Tracy Austin, etc., she was a nervous wreck. So there's a lot of pressure when you're playing against a 15-year-old kid. So it's going to be very interesting to see how Simona Halep handles that on Monday, and how if Coco can continue to rise to the occasion and block out all the distractions and the hype that's surrounding her.
They played on center court yesterday while Novak Djokovic played next door. They booted him off center court.
That's amazing. Justifiably so, actually. I mean, he, just based on what I said, as far as, the BBC television ratings are much higher for Coco than they are for Novak. So absolutely, that match deserved to be on center court. And I think that her match against Simona Halep on Monday should be on center court. But, the court assignments are also kind of kooky. I mean, it's like it's all the same court, all the same place. It's sometimes there's a little controversy there that's not necessary, and the schedulers are doing the best they can to accommodate singles versus doubles versus all the television networks, plus fan interest and so forth. So, but still, to be playing against a middle-ranked player on center and getting the call on center court of Wimbledon is a huge credit to Coco.
Spending time on the WaitForIt.com hotline with tennis historian Randy Walker is joining us now. We're talking about Wimbledon. And while we're talking so much about Coco, we've forgotten about two other American women four American women right now are playing today. And later on today, Serena Williams and Sloane Stephens will play. I'm not saying we've forgotten about them, but my goodness, when this 15-year comes along, and and really given what they said about Coco yesterday, she has the build of Venus with the attitude and the fight of Serena. And it's kind of what we're seeing. But Serena, the real thing, she plays today.
Yeah, I think that actually helps Serena and Sloane that Coco is getting all the attention. And I think it takes the pressure off them, and nobody's really talking about them and discussing. And they are talking about Serena Williams, though, playing mixed doubles with Andy Murray.
That's how about
where
she's
getting most of her buzz. But I think both of them prefer to just play their matches, get it over with, not have too much hype, not have the media and the public talking about them too much. I think both of them are going to be, kind of appreciate that Coco is stealing the spotlight from them. And they're obviously both very proud of Coco being, a fellow Americans and so forth. So I think that actually helps Serena and Sloane. And I think both of them are also, obviously you can never count out Serena at Wimbledon, but I think Sloane is a little underrated as far as her, opportunity to capture some more majors too.
Yeah, we'll watch for them and see what they do. On the men's side today, we got a couple American men still around trying to get into the second week. Steve Johnson is playing right now, and Sam Querrey is underway too. Sam Querrey is a kind of it's just odd character. We expected so much from him early on. In recent years, he's shown that he plays well at this place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He beat Andy Murray on center court at Wimbledon a couple years ago and got to the semifinals. And he if he's serving great and if he's grooving from the baseline like he has in the first couple matches so far this week, he's definitely a threat to win the title or get to the final. I mean, with that serve, he can beat anybody. If his serve is on, he can beat anybody. I mean, you saw Kevin Anderson get all the way to the final last year. I mean, Sam could certainly do that. He's got a great draw to get to potentially the quarterfinals play Rafael Nadal, and, he certainly has a puncher's chance there. Then he potentially could play, a guy named Roger Federer in the semi. So he's got, a tough draw, beyond there, but Sam can certainly, could certainly win the title. Stevie Johnson's a grinder. His rankings dropped, kind of considerably in the last year or so. He's gotten married and, struggled a little bit. He lost a lot of matches in a row, but he's, had a pretty good grass court season. He played all the grass court tournaments leading into Wimbledon, had, two great wins, and now he's in the third round. He's playing Nishikori today, and would love to see Stevie win you know, a couple more rounds and get back in there. And you know, these American players are also, you know, they got their eye on the qualifying for the Olympics as well in 2020. And Stevie won a bronze in Rio de Janeiro, so he may want to be looking to get you know, back into the Olympics. And I know people in Atlanta certainly remember Stevie from winning the NCAA's team title and individual title, you know, up the road in Athens. So, you know, I think he still has some fans in the Atlanta area.
Yep. First ATP Tour win was also in the Atlanta tournament here. So we do remember Stevie Johnson playing here. Randy, we thank you for, you know, because the day has started. The matches have already started. So I know you're up and enjoying them, and we will too. But thanks so much for spending some time with us this morning. Always good catching up with you.
Great, Sam. Thanks so much. Everybody tune in to ESPN, ESPN2, to catch some Wimbledon.
All right. That is Randy Walker. Don't forget, you can follow him on Twitter at Tennis Publisher. I said he was a star at Georgia. He said he was 0-7 when he played at Georgia. He's on the team. All right, folks. Headed for the top of the hour. Top of the hour, we're going to get more into the situation and talk a little bit about Coco Gauff and that age eligibility. How you feel about that? That and more as we continue. Stay with us on this game day Saturday morning on Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929TheGame.com. Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929TheGame.com. Sam Crenshaw with you into our second hour on this Saturday morning, a game day Saturday morning, because at 4:10, our Atlanta Braves will be at home and be taking on the Miami Marlins, looking to get a win and hopefully not have a lengthy rain delay as last night. They did get the win. Brian McCann with a walk-off single. 1-0. That's all the Braves needed to get the win over the Marlins. A long evening at the ballpark, but still a fruitful one for Atlanta as they get the win. So they'll be going at it today. Max Fried will be the starting pitcher for the Braves as they take on the Marlins out at SunTrust Park, continuing this Independence Day holiday weekend series there. Also, overnight, big things happening with the National Basketball Association. Oh, just in case you missed it, big trade going down. Not trade, signing going down. It's free agency. As Kawhi Leonard makes his decision, he will not be returning to play in Toronto. He will be going west back to his native Southern California, but not to play with LeBron James and the Lakers. He will play with the Los Angeles Clippers, signs the 4-year max deal to go there, and Paul George will be coming along with him. He will request and receive a trade from Oklahoma City. And so the Clippers now are set to be one of the forces, not just in the West, but in the NBA. With Doc Rivers coaching that team, now they look to be to be able to run things on the top, maybe helping to supplant Golden State from the perch that they have hailed for some time there out West. A lot of people wanted to write in the Lakers as being the favorite with Anthony Davis going there. Maybe not the case now, as there'll be an awful lot of star power in Los Angeles. Can they fit all that star power in one building? You know, they play in the same building at their Staples Center. And how much will the tickets be to go and watch these teams play? My goodness. But that's big. That's coming up on the West Coast of those players going there. The Lakers, meanwhile, do make some signings. They make some signings now since they missed out on the Kawhi sweepstakes. They signed Danny Green to a 2-year deal, so he'll be joining that team. That's apparently worth $30 million. He's going to be joining the team. They re-signed Kentavious Caldwell-Pope from a UGA standout who's been with the Lakers. JaVale McGee also signs a 2-year deal with the Lakers. So we see what happens. Still probably another move or two they got to make to try to get some more support there, as they have to restock that roster to play alongside Anthony Davis and LeBron James. So we'll see what happens there as far as the Lakers. But that's the big news in the NBA last night on the West Coast, along with the earthquake that shook the aftershocks from Thursday afternoon, reverberated again last night. And watching some of the news, we have a monitor here in the Kia Studios, and just been watching some of the things that were taking place at the time the earthquake took place, a 7.1 magnitude earthquake that they could feel in Los Angeles, still in that Ridgecrest, California area where things happen on Independence Day. Los Angeles, they showed video of the Dodgers playing their game, and you could see things moving, the camera shaking at Dodger Stadium. The players on the field said they didn't feel anything, really, but the fans could feel it, and you could see it visibly on TV. Also, the NBA Summer League, and Zion Williamson making his debut with the Pelicans last night, the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas, and things started to shake there. And you know people who are accustomed to that, because I don't think I could ever get accustomed to the ground shaking. People just got up and started leaving. I mean, they knew what was going on. Nobody, no public address announcer said, we're having an earthquake, or this is happening, or we're having activity. You know, no, these people just got up and headed for the exit. They knew exactly what was happening. The scoreboard shaking a little bit. The speakers above were starting to sway back and forth. And they pulled the teams off the floor to see if it would calm down and stop. It didn't, so they stopped playing basketball last night out west. I don't know about you folks. I've never experienced earthquake before. And folks out west always say they're terrified of what the natural thing that we have in our area, which is usually severe storms and tornadoes that we have in our part of the country. And I always say, at least with tornadoes, we get a bit of a warning. Sometimes we get an advance warning. Sometimes, you know, they pop up and they're in the area and all of a sudden, you know. But usually, you know, there's something that warns us that it's nearby or the possibility. I don't know what you do at a place where the ground shakes. And they said they had some kind of warning down in California Thursday. I mean, like a minute or two before it happened. I'm like, really? A minute and two and the ground moves. I love to go and visit Southern California. I think it's a cool place to go. But if I ever go there and the ground moves, I probably won't go back. I just, you know, that's something to comprehend. I mean, we live on a fault, if you want to talk about that, here in our part of Georgia. There is one. There has been seismic activity in the last few years. It's usually happened overnight. And I guess I slept real sound because I slept through it. I didn't feel a thing. But just the idea of that whole thing happening, and while sporting events are taking place, and they just kept playing baseball in Los Angeles. They did stop things as far as the Summer League basketball goes today. They look to resume later on today, and our Atlanta Hawks Summer League team will be in action against the Milwaukee Bucks Summer League team at 5 o'clock Eastern time. So that's coming up today out in Las Vegas. Speaking of basketball, Atlanta Dream got a win last night, 77-66 over the Storm, Seattle. 77-66 final. Tiffany Hayes with 21 points in that game. Dream go to Phoenix to take on the Mercury tomorrow. That's what's coming up with them. Braves, like I said, get the 1-0 win. They're home today at 4:10 is the start time. Max Fried will be on the mound for the Braves. And hopefully, there won't be any lengthy rain delays or anything that will delay the game, and people can go out and just enjoy it. Spending some time with Randy Walker the last segment, and we talked about Wimbledon, and we talked a little bit about Corey Coco Gauff, the 15-year-old who is just stealing the show at a place where it's most intimidating for most players, most pressure-packed at the All England Club, playing on center court for the first time and playing like she'd been there before. She's played this whole tournament, this whole week, like she's been there before. And just think about this now. She's a qualifier. She had to win a tournament, basically, to get into the tournament. Now, that's what she's done. You would think if she had run out of gas yesterday, well, okay, she's already been playing. This is already her second week playing. She's about to go into her third week of competition at 15 years old. If you can wrap your brain around that. And I mean, a lot of us have young people that we're coaching, young people that we're getting training, high-level training for whatever sport, especially during these summer months. Think about the travel ball that people play in soccer or baseball or basketball that seemingly never ends. It's like just goes on year-round, game after game after game after game after game. Well, here's a player who's done some of those things as far as tennis goes. Her family allowed her to turn pro earlier this year, and there are limits. There's certain limits that have been put in place because of what's happened in the past with some players who took to the tour because they were able to compete early on, just suffered burnout. There was some heartbreaking stories of some players who really developed as tennis players but kind of didn't develop as folk. And so you want this young lady to continue to be what we see. She's 15 years old. she still, you know, has a lot of fun. She's in school. She took a test before she played Venus Williams. No problem. She did that. So she's a great student. She does that. She's enjoyed music and that type thing. And so her family around, we see her mom and dad sitting there in the stands. And her father, Corey Goff, a lot of people in the area know because he played his college basketball at Georgia State University. So a lot of people on Decatur Street have been happy about Coco Goff's achievement. But here's the deal. She's 15 years old. She's already played 7 tournaments, and she can only technically play 10 at this age. And we think about before her next birthday, before she turns 16, and that's March of next year. So she recently turned 15. And there are rules in place by the WTA, and a lot of people are looking at these rules like, can't she play a little bit more? And that's the question I want to ask some of you today. 404-741-0929. You can text us on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, or you can join the conversation if you want to. And just give me your thoughts, 404-741-0929. The rule goes this way. It's to protect players between the ages of 14 and 17. A 14-year-old can play up to 8 professional tournaments before her 15th birthday. A 15-year-old can play up to 10 professional tournaments. 16-year-old can play up to 12. And a 17-year-old can play up to 16 professional tournaments. Now, Coco is already at 7. And these are since turned 15 years old. So she's played quite a few professional tournaments. These may not be all WTA, the highest level tournaments. Some may be challengers. But now that she's shown what she can do on this stage, she's going to get an entree into some of the big ones. She get into qualifiers. If she's not in the top 100, she get wild cards. You want her in your tournament. She's going to sell tickets. She's going to bring TV ratings. You want her in your tournament some kind of way right now if you're operating a women's professional level tennis tournament. Now, because she won the French Open Juniors and reached a high enough ITF junior ranking, she can play in an additional 2 tournaments. So she basically can have 5 more tournaments before her 16th birthday. You got to strategically scatter these 5 tournaments. She comes back to the States after Wimbledon. You know you're going to want to play the U.S. Open. You're going to want to play at least 1 tournament, if not 2, to prepare you for the U.S. Open. There are other tournaments on the tour after that. There's an Asian tour. There's European indoor tour that goes on probably right up until Thanksgiving. I guess she won't play any of those because she would definitely want to play the Australian Open in January. And oh, by the way, you may want to play a tournament to tune up before that. So that's where we're at with her. 5 tournaments, which ones does she play? Unless the WTA relaxes the rule. How do you feel about that? She's shown you she can win. She's already making about $200,000, although she can't even buy a car right now. Well, she could buy the car. She just can't drive it. Want to come over and see my car? I can't drive it. But here it is. Looks nice. You know, she's not going to do that. And I really don't think that the money is that big a thing right now. I think the thing right now is the ranking and the points as she wins. And people who are not familiar with the point system with tennis, it rewards consistency, success, and consistency. She doesn't have any points to defend as she plays these pro tournaments because it's the first time she's played them. Next year, when she comes back to Wimbledon, she'll have points to defend because she played and she's had success. She's going to have to match the success or her point numbers will go backwards. Okay, you don't understand that. There'll be a pop quiz on that later. But that's what she has to do. The thing of it now, Roger Federer, and he weighs in on things from time to time, says he thinks the WTA should relax the rule for Coco Gauff and allow her to play more tournaments if she wants to play. And, you know, Roger Federer's not her dad, but I mean just the idea that he's a preeminent voice and considered by someone of the greatest players of all time, and he is saying, let this young lady play more tennis. Don't know. I'm glad that there's a rule in effect. I'm glad that it's there. And maybe she does grab another tournament or two. But I don't know if 15 years old want to be out there playing every week. Richard Williams didn't allow Venus and Serena to do it. And that's why they're still playing at the age they're in. Just that. We just want to see great things for Coco Gauff to continue. Let me know what you think. 404-741-0929. Back with more on this game day Saturday morning on Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929TheGame.com. Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929TheGame.com. Sam Crenshaw with you. Working our way up to the top of the hour. Sports Insider comes your way at 8 o'clock. And, of course, big stories overnight coming from out west. One, a free agent signing that will send Kawhi Leonard back to Southern California to play with the Clippers. But that's not the only story that happened out west last night. Summer League basketball going on in Las Vegas and disrupted by the earth shaking stopped everything. And just so happens that our basketball insider from here at Sports Radio 929 The Game, DeShaun Tate, is there. And he joins us now. He's waking up early because I know it's old dog 30 out there right now. But, DeShaun, good morning, man. How are you, first of all?
Clark and Crenshaw, good morning. Top of the morning to you guys. I appreciate you guys for having me on. I'm fine. I'm good. It took me a second to figure it all out because in Michigan, in my neck of the woods where I come from, we don't have earthquakes. So, you know, by the time I got to figuring out that that's not some guys being really rude to me that works in media shaking my table intentionally, I figured it all out and I made an escape.
Where exactly in Thomas and Mack Center were you?
I was in the media seating area, so it was behind the basket on the opposite side that, you know, your LeBrons and Anthony Davis and all those guys in that back tunnel up in that area, more towards on the opposite side, closer towards the front.
Yeah. When they stopped the play, I know they pulled the TV camera back, and we could see the scoreboard moving and the speakers up above. The thing that got me to shut, the people who, I guess, are accustomed to that just got up and started walking. You know, they just got up and left. They're like, okay, we know what's going on. I'm kind of with you. I'm not much for being in a place when the ground moves, man.
Yeah. No, I can't really tell you how I knew that was the time, but I kind of figured that everybody's leaving for a good reason, and it's not just because everyone is just finding out that Zion Williamson was not going to be playing for the rest of the night. So I kind of figured, you know what, everything's moving for a reason, and that's when it's time to get up out of here.
He is in Las Vegas for Summer League, but he's there on a very eventful evening at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas. Our own DeShaun Tate. You can follow him, by the way, always while he's there at the Summer League games at Tate's Take Sports and, of course, here at 929thegame.com. Thoughts about what you got a chance to see with Zion last night before all the shaking started. There was a lot of anticipation. That place was packed.
Yeah, shaking might have been because of him. He had a pretty good night. I think he went 4 for 9, played 9 minutes last night. And, you know, I think he got off to a little bit of a rough start in a sense. You can kind of tell that the Knicks team was really trying to show that, you know, they're not backing down just because this guy, you know, is the number one pick and all, getting all the hype. And they knew that a lot of people were coming out to kind of see him, but that they weren't going to back down. So, you know, but he did a very good job, you know, fighting that off. And the Knicks kind of be physical with him a little bit. But he's really good at making adjustments, as you can see during his stint at Duke. He would get a little frustrated sometimes where guys try and get a little overly aggressive with him and send him to the free throw line intentionally. But he certainly started playing with, you know, his IQ and started looking a lot better and, you know, two-hand flushes. And I didn't expect to see a lot of minutes out of him. But I'm starting to get the feeling that he's picking up close to about 10 extra pounds. And those are 10 pounds that he couldn't afford to be picking up. So, you know, and that's probably kind of expected to happen when you're not in your running up and down 94 feet on a regular basis like he was at Duke. That's something that we see. So I think he'll end up being just fine in the end.
Spending time on the waitfor.com hotline, our very own DeShaun Tate. He is in Las Vegas for Summer League. And DeShaun landed so hard, he and Zion had made the ground shake out there. They had to stop playing last night. Obviously, people around here want to know about the Hawks team, and the Hawks team plays later on today. You're going to get a chance to go over and get a look at them?
Yeah, I am. I'm really excited about it. It's not a bad team. I think once we get the opportunity to for the trade to go through with Bruno Fernando and DeAndre Hunter from draft night, then I think that, you know, it'll probably create a little bit more buzz. But we do get an opportunity to see, you know, Amari Spellman get out there and showcase what he can do, something that we haven't seen a whole lot of Amari Spellman or talked about him really a whole lot. And then Jalen Adams, who came into, you know, the offseason expected to be the backup point guard next season for Trae Young. And a couple other guys, Matt Mooney from Texas Tech, who never would have made that run to the Final Four or the national championship game, rather, if it wasn't for him, in addition to Jared Culver. So I think that, you know, it is a nice team that we get a chance to see. And I think it's a little far-fetched to say that any of these guys who weren't, you know, on the team last year is going to make the team. But granted, I mean, anything can happen, so we'll see.
Yeah. All right, talk about this deal that happened overnight, and when did you get wind of all of it? Was much of that going on, people talking about it, you hearing about it while you were there at the Summer League games, or how did you get the information on what we all know now is Kawhi going back to California?
Yeah, I made it back to my hotel already by that point because, you know, they canceled the game bout from Summer League after, you know, the earthquake and everything. So, but I got wind of it, you know, here at the hotel. And, man, I was shocked to my own self, to be honest with you. But, you know, I believe that you can never count out Kawhi Leonard, and anything can really, you know, happen, you know. And so I really truly believe that while the Lakers was a good possibility for him, I really thought it was going to be Toronto where he would return to. But, you know, the Clippers is probably a little bit more of, and of course this isn't necessarily dealing with the terms of the deal, but it's fitting for him as well. I mean, whoever would have thought that a team that me growing up in my generation is the team that you don't ever want to get drafted or traded to becomes the team that now all of a sudden everybody probably wants to start running to go and play. But it's a totally different generation, totally different, you know, basketball now. And so I think that they gave up quite a bit. But when you got a guy who's a winner on all levels, you give up what you have to, including a very good young piece in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, to go and get that person.
Yep, and he's bringing Paul George with him. That's big, and I'm sure that's the move that helped to really make that deal go.
Yeah, that's the crazy part about it. And, you know, he's a guy from the West Coast as well, and that's two West Coast guys. And I know he's really excited about, you know, I can imagine going to play, you know, going back home again, for both of these guys. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that lineup is going to look like. But, you know, where you still have, you know, Patrick Beverley, who just re-signed with them, and, you know, I think the Landry Shamet is there as well. Everybody talks about, you know, the rookie class of Trae Young and DeAndre Ayton and Luka Doncic and all these guys. But what you don't see is a couple of the guys that you weren't expecting to have really good rookie seasons. And Landry Shamet is one of those guys as well, adding to that core. So, you know, I think it'll definitely be interesting. I thought it might be made a little bit more interesting if we still had the opportunity to see Boban there still, who got traded the other day or picked up a free agency. But nevertheless, I think once we get everything shaked out and get an officialized roster, I think we'll kind of tell. But right now, you got to imagine that they probably look like the front runner.
Can you imagine the star power in one building and in one city, and how the folks in New York must feel? We're the Mecca. Well, L.A., not just one, but two teams with a lot of star power. Those are going to be some pretty pricey tickets to go and see both teams.
It is. No, it is. And I'll say this much. You know, people are harping on New York a lot, and for good reason, obviously. And then, you know, thought they were going to get Zion. And then there's, you know, LeBron or AD, rather, and KD and this person and that person. Kyrie, and then none of this stuff happens. But they've got a pretty good young core. Just watching them in summer league. Now, granted, again, it's just summer league, so you don't want to, you know, take this with too much. You know, you kind of want to take it with a grain of salt, whatever. It's not going to hold too much weight. But again, they have some pretty good pieces there. Now, they're not outstanding pieces, but if they stick together, you know, stay together, and they grow together, they could be in the mode of creating the same kind of buzz, rather, over time, that the Atlanta Hawks are starting to create if they're doing it the right way. But not everybody has the awesome Travis Link either. But, you know, the New York thing will be fine, I think, over time, especially getting Julius Randle and adding him to that mix as well. But certainly when you're talking about L.A., I mean, I don't even know how they're going to be able to hold all of these people in one arena in L.A. I can only imagine what ticket sales moving forward is going to be like.
It's going to be amazing. Quickly, the East, what does this do to a little bit of the landscape? Because you figure Kawhi goes back to Toronto, they're going to be at the top along with Milwaukee. Now they're not going to be at the top. It's still going to be a solid team in the best eight in the East. Is there any chance the Hawks could now snicker in and be maybe the eighth team, considering the shift now in the East?
I think that the Hawks not only have the ability to be in the eighth spot anyway. You know, those are the expectations, but maybe to even be better than the eight. I'm thinking maybe somewhere like a seventh seed, and that's if Kawhi Leonard never went anywhere, to be honest with you. And that, realistically, I mean, that should be the expectations for this team, you know, not outside of the playoffs. They're not sneaking into the playoffs, but being a team that expects to be there. You know, and there's going to be a lot of work that has to be done before they can get to that point. You're still going to have some other teams. We're not sure what to make out of Boston yet. And for all these teams, I mean, we don't have finalized rosters just yet. So many different things can shake out, you know, but in the same token, you know, you do still have Philadelphia, which, you know, I still have to see it out a lot of those young guys before I can automatically put them up there really high. And then KD's not joining, you know, the Nets right away either. But it's still in the same talk. You certainly have Milwaukee right there. The Indiana Pacers is going to be pretty close. I mean, the Pistons made the playoffs last year and added Derrick Rose and a couple other pieces. So they should be right there in the mix. I think it'll be interesting between the Pistons and the Hawks and maybe one or two other teams that might be, you know, in the event might be fighting for a spot. But I certainly like what the Hawks got going on and expect them to get in this year for sure. The Hawks aren't just creating the buzz in the city of Atlanta with the things that they're doing. I've talked to quite a few people. They're creating a lot of buzz out here on the West Coast and everywhere within the NBA as well.
That's fantastic. That's the thing. This man is on the ground there in Las Vegas. We hope the ground stays still. And Deshaun, thanks for spending some time with us this morning, man. Go back and catch your nap.
Absolutely, man. Anything for Clark and Crenshaw. Appreciate you guys.
All right. That is Deshaun Tate, our very own basketball coverage extraordinaire. He is there. Felt the ground shake and everything there last night. He's okay. But got these thoughts on the tray on the signing last night, what it means for the Hawks and Hawks summer league team playing later today at 5:00. Coming up next now, Danny, you hanging on? We'll talk about Coco. Hang on. We're going to get your call and more as we continue on this game day Saturday morning on Sports Radio 929 The Game, 929TheGame.com. Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929TheGame.com. Sam Crenshaw with you. Working our way up to the top of the hour. Dan Kamal, Sports Insider, comes your way. On this Saturday, game day Saturday, Braves at home, 4:10 game time. Hopefully they won't have a 2.5-hour rain delay like last night, but hopefully they get the same result as they won last night by a score of 1-0. Brian McCann with the walk-off single to win the game there in the ninth inning. And Max Fried will be the starter for the Braves today as they look to continue their winning ways against the Marlins on this holiday weekend. Also, Wimbledon. Play continuing there. Got some matches going on right now as we speak over there. Got American Stevie Johnson. He's down a couple of sets, but American Sam Querrey is up 2 sets. Could possibly win his as well. Let me say that. So we talked a lot about things that have happened at Wimbledon so far this week and how Coco Gauff has been the big story there this week. And, you know, the 15-year-old accomplishing so much and taking it all in stride. The way she's been able to perform and win, it's been remarkable. A 3-set test yesterday, she comes out on top. And we talked earlier about her and about the eligibility rules as far as the WTA Tour goes, the fact that she's 15 and she's allowed to play 10 professional tournaments. And I put it out to you, if she were your child or someone you cared about or loved, how often would you have her play on a professional tennis tour? How often would she play? You know, she's 15-year-old, she got 10 tournaments. She's played 7. She could end up with 2 additional tournaments that would give her 5, but that's all the way until her next birthday in March. That's getting past the U.S. Open. They're getting past the Australian Open. And so now you wonder, in that case, you know, how do you scatter those tournaments out so that she gets to play the tournament? We got Danny, who's been hanging on the line to talk about that with us. Danny, thanks for hanging on. What are your thoughts about Coco, and how often would you have a 15-year-old play?
Well, I guess I just think of my own kids, and I had them all playing multiple sports, but I'm getting heck right now because my wife's yelling at me, well, why didn't you introduce them to tennis? So I'm getting in heck for that. But anyways, I think that it really is a good rule to prevent the burnout. I really think it's a good rule, but here's the thing that I admire about these parents is they made her play other sports. To all the other parents out there, if you're trying to build an athlete, I just think it's such a good thing to play more than one sport. But here's my question to you is I get this mother is a teacher. I mean, she's homeschooled, so I guess she won't be going to college, I guess. Is that right?
Well, she's already turned pro. If she goes, she can still go to college. She just went, and thanks a lot, Danny. She might go to college. She won't go and play college tennis. She's already turned pro and making money. Now, she can still do college. The WTA does have a college program for players who are playing on the tour. Venus Williams has received her degree. Sloane Stephens has received her college degree. So there is a program in place if you want to do that. But you won't not play college tennis. Joining us now in the studio, and I want to borrow you just for a minute, Dr. Dale Yake, because Sports Insider is coming up. And welcome you back. It's great to have you back in studio in the Kia Studios on Saturday morning. You and Dan are coming up at the top of the hour. That's about this eligibility rule in a 15-year-old doing what she's doing. And she's shown us some wisdom yesterday. She had to make some adjustments. No other sport, I think, challenges you to make adjustments on the fly without a coach or timeout, as tennis does. But there also is no sport that consumes its young the way that tennis does, and we've seen it happen in the past.
I think you hit on it, Sam. I happened to be around Saddlebrook Resorts and Jennifer Capriati when she was coming up through the ranks, right? And,
yeah,
and obviously,
yeah.
It's great. Another great example of probably just the pitfalls of a young athlete at that age in a single athlete sport that coaching. Obviously, you could coach these kids 24 hours a day, 365. They could play in a tournament every week of the year. And that rule was put in place for the Jennifer Capriati's of the world and many others for that matter that obviously had some episodes of brilliance and then collapsed, right? And I think obviously her parents, as the caller said there, parents have done a great job managing her to this point. But, you know, this is a sport and professional sports consume you, and tennis, as you already said, does. And so the rule was put in place for good reason, and I hope it stays. And everybody can say, let her play more tennis, but I would tell you from a medical professional standpoint, and maybe not even from a medical professional, from a father, and maybe from a psychological perspective,
yeah.
Right? And maybe even more important. It was put in place for a reason, and I think those are good reasons.
Yeah, that's what people were wondering. 17, in the fact that right now she's played seven tournaments. She has three more, could end up with five more tournaments. Obviously, you want to play the U.S. Open. And obviously, you want to play the Australian. So you got to scatter those tournaments and time them out right.
I didn't have the chance to listen to you earlier, Sam, but I'm sure you probably alluded to the fact that this is going to be her third week of tennis now because she had to qualify to play.
She had to win a tournament to get into the tournament.
And so then she's probably going to not have to qualify for the U.S. Open, but she's going to play some preliminary tournaments just to be ready. And now you're talking about the exposure of these athletes. It's something that she can't play many more tournaments until she turns 16. So I think spacing them out now is probably going to be really important, and where she plays is going to be really instrumental. It's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, this is a great athlete. Let's don't ruin her at 15, right? We want to be around, and I think you said it earlier, the Williams sisters were managed – tremendously at this age, and their dad was known, you know, maybe by some as being negative,
yeah,
but he wouldn't let him play every other week or he let him play once a month is essentially what he was doing at this age when Venus was 15. And so it's really important that that's managed well and so that they have a long career. I mean, this young lady can play until she's 35, maybe 40, 45 by the time her career is over, right?
Right.
We'll be extending the life of these athletes much longer in her time frame. But, I think it's going to be fun to watch, fun to see her. And the mental fortitude that she displayed yesterday, being down at match point a couple times, is quite phenomenal.
Yeah, it is to see that. And like I said, to make the adjustments, she changed her game. you know, to go from the power type game she played against the Venus early in the week, she goes all the spins and slices and lobs and slows things down and change the pace. And she just adapted to all of it. It's quite remarkable.
You know, I was in the air flying back watching Wimbledon the other day, and I was thinking of you the other day, Sam, because Kyrgios was over there screaming at the ump and the ref, right? And basically just challenging him along the way. Did you happen to see that that whole mess with him and Nadal? You know, I, not to change the subject, but it made me think of you because you're more of a tennis guy than I am, and I've been around tennis, obviously working as a medical professional, but never really like the full-blown side of it from a sports side. When he hit a ball at Nick Kyrgios, hit a ball at Nadal, almost intentionally at his body, and he got a lot of shade for that. What's your thoughts on that? Are you not allowed to hit a ball at a guy? What's the rule?
You do that. You're trying to move him. You can do that. You can do that. And he plays him. He's got a lot of a little mind game going on with Nadal anyway. I mean, they've had some things in the past. There was a match down in Mexico. I guess earlier this year, where he did a little gamesmanship. I mean, Kyrgios was shouting at the official, then he turned and shouted at some fans, and Nadal just got all off his game, and Kyrgios beat him. So there's some history there, you know. So that's, you know, tune in for the next chapter in New York.
it was interesting to me. I don't know what the rules, the unwritten rules of every sport are, but the unwritten rules here, and maybe it's just Wimbledon, but obviously to hit at somebody, I mean, I don't play tennis much, but I'm going to hit it at you, right?
But usually if somebody hits a ball at you, actually somebody will say, hey, didn't mean to hurt you, just trying to, you know, you do some type of sign to let people know, hey, I'm not really trying to do anything bad to you. I'm just trying to win a point. But I don't think Kyrgios did that.
It was just an interesting match to watch. And, you know, Kyrgios has got one of the best serves in tennis, right? But the guy can't get out of his own way at times. And seemed like he played stronger after he's screaming at the ump. I thought it was fascinating to watch for a moment there anyway. Made Thursday interesting.
He's one of the best athletes out there. And the thing that he loves is basketball. When he comes to play the tournament here at the BB&T, maybe I shouldn't say this, he ends up getting into McCamish Pavilion so he can play, and he gets the whole place. He goes in there and plays basketball. And that's what he loves. He's a Boston Celtics fan. How are you going to be from Australia to be a Boston Celtics fan? But I mean, and he plays well.
Yeah.
He's a good basketball. Yeah. And if he grew up in this country, he probably would have gotten the basketball before he got the tennis racket. Think of Rafael Nadal if he grew up in this country. Yeah. And how many sports a guy built like him would get to play before he got a tennis racket in his hand? He's, what, about 6'2", about 185?
185, yeah.
With great feet and a lefty? How many sports would he get to play?
You know, you need to do a show one time where we just talk about all the athletes that don't play the sport that they could actually probably play in the professional leagues, right? Because it's not just basketball, and it's not just the football guys that are out there. I mean, I was watching a baseball game. Well, obviously, I was watching the Pittsburgh Pirates the other day, of course, right, the Cubs. And I mean, there are probably five or six guys could be playing five other sports on the field at all times. It just shows you the diversity of these athletes today. And that speaks to why these kids at a young age should probably not be single sport athletes.
Right.
Right. Obviously, you got one example here of a 15-year-old playing at a professional level, but these kids should be playing other sports.
And, I'm sure she got opportunities to be other. I'm sure her dad put a basketball in her hand. He even played basketball at Georgia State.
Yeah.
And she probably could show you something on the track. Her mother was a track star at Florida State. So, I mean, she's a pretty versatile athlete. Tennis is just a sport that she's chosen.
That's like a test tube baby there, isn't it? That's like she got one of those.
You can't miss the gene pool.
No.
You know, you got that. She hit the lottery for sure.
Phenomenal.
Yep.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.